Mini episode 445 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Lounge Managing Partner Rick Morris. We have with us today noted sports journalist Rick Bucher, for many years covering the NBA beat for ESPN and ESPN Magazine, and a man who now spans a couple of different large media companies. The station that he is at in San Francisco, 95.7 The Game, is an ESPN radio affiliate, but additionally, the man works for the NBC Sports/Comcast banner, as well as a little bit in Turner Sports via the Bleacher Report. So at this point in time, he is being employed by a number of major media entities who are all desirous of his journalism and his reportage. And it is a pleasure to be able to have him gracing our independent brand here today. Great pleasure to have him back on, as we had him on about a year or so ago to talk about some of these very same subjects. But it is a great pleasure to once again welcome to the FDH Lounge Rick Bucher from the Bay Area. Rick, welcome to the program today, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be with you again. The lounge is looking better than ever.
Thank you so much. It's great to have you back in. And there is so much going on. Of course, your longtime beat, the NBA, so much going on there. The summer of LeBron once again, which I have to say from my perch in the greater Cleveland area, has gone a lot better than it did 4 years ago. But this entire story, which again, you're on top of as a reporter, and you're also seeing, of course, the narrative side of things as a talk show host out there in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just intrigued by your thoughts on this, because it seems to me, almost at the risk of oversimplifying, a mirror image of 4 years ago. The way that Cleveland kind of came up on Miami in the process really seems to mirror the way that Miami came up on Cleveland 4 years ago, and that people really weren't taking seriously the scenario until it happened. It just seems to me from the moment that Cleveland won the lottery, that just seemed to set all the balls in motion this time here, and that it ended up in a place I would think nobody could have anticipated going into that night.
I'd say it's a fair comparison, not simply because they won the lottery, but because obviously Miami was caught by surprise in his decision to go back to Cleveland. Most people that are familiar with LeBron always felt that he would go back eventually. It was just a matter of when. But this timing seemed a little bit odd. Now, that's probably a little bit odder in going back now than it was leaving Cleveland and going to Miami. But I believe that some of that surprise was because it wasn't necessarily a decision that LeBron had fully committed to until he actually did it. Now, I know that he made the decision and he told Sports Illustrated. Sports Illustrated was aware of what he was going to do a week before they actually announced it. But coming into the postseason, I don't believe that he already had his mindset that he was going back to Cleveland at this point, just as I don't believe that when he left for Miami. I know that there was a time during the free agent period where he was still talking to Chris Bosh about possibly joining him in Cleveland. And when Bosh said no, that's when he decided, you know what, then I really don't have any choice. If I have to play for a ring and I have to win a ring and that's what I need to validate my superstardom, then I'm going to have to go to Miami to get that done. So I would say that there are a lot of comparisons there, and probably the defining one between the two is the fact that nobody really knew what he was going to do except LeBron, and even LeBron wasn't sure what he was going to do until he got fairly along in the process.
There seem to be a number of elements there, some of which you touched on, Rick, and then it goes to also, I think, probably the two lowest moments of LeBron's basketball career, in my estimation, and with the possible exception of the NBA Finals in 2011 and the way that they ended, but that infamous series against Boston, which I have to say Cavs fans are trying to forgive and forget back in 2010. Easier to forgive than
you
forget,
can never
I suppose.
Forget. You can never forget that one.
No, it is burned in my brain, and I will tell you too, Rick, on a personal note, my birthday was on Game 5. I sat there and watched that atrocity
wow.
on my birthday, and it's one of the defining...
That's just not fair.
Sure
it is. Nobody deserves that.
No, I'm shuddering thinking of it now. It was
actually,
so awful.
Actually, what did you do to deserve that? That's what I need to know. What did you do? What have you done that you would deserve something like that?
I had to have murdered entire villages in a past life to have deserved that, I guess, if indeed I did deserve it, if we buy that premise. But, it was that series there, and then the finals this year, some would say equally shocking the way that it happened. I mean, yeah, we knew coming in that Dwayne Wade was kind of gimpy. Look at what happened with him during the regular season. But the whole bubble wrap strategy sure looked like it was paying off nicely against Indiana there. And then they get into the finals, and I think, you know, Miami – didn't they get tripped up the same way Cleveland did by having something like that happen right as LeBron was making up his mind about what's going to come next?
Yeah, I honestly feel as if, first of all, it was a five-game, the series was over in five games. I feel as if the series was a lot closer than that. Keep in mind, they lost game one and narrowly lost game one with no air conditioning in which LeBron James cramped up and couldn't finish the game. What surprised me, because I thought that LeBron was past this. And to me, it was very edifying that the whole idea of championships mean everything. And, you know, not five, not six, not seven. I've never been convinced that the championships are the be-all and the end-all for LeBron James. I feel like if he wouldn't have been under so much pressure to win a championship and didn't look at Cleveland as a place where, you know what, I don't think I can win a championship by myself here, and I don't know that I can attract somebody to come here to help me win a championship. And if I don't do that, then I'm getting so much heat now, I need to, no pun intended, I need to win a championship. I think ultimately that's what drove him to Miami. And after he won a couple, the heat was off. It wasn't, you know, nobody was demanding that he win any more championships. And if it was all about championships, I believe that the first time that he went to the finals, we wouldn't have seen him go MIA. We wouldn't have seen him disappear or be so passive on the doorstep of winning a championship. Now, he learned his lesson, and he was a different player the second time around against Oklahoma City and against San Antonio. You know, every once in a while we'd see him revert a little bit, but for the most part, he did what he had to do. He was the aggressor. He dominated. He dominated as the best player in the series should. But then we get to this year, and it's 1-1 going back to Miami. And if you recall, that's the game where he didn't get going until the third quarter. And San Antonio had already run them out of the gym. For me, if you are LeBron James and you're angry about game one, you're angry about the fact that they let the air conditioning system break down and they cost you game one. And now instead of going back home 2-0, you're going home 1-1. And you want to put your foot on the neck of the San Antonio Spurs and show them that the only way that they can beat you is by playing on a hot summer day in Texas with no air conditioning. That's the only chance that they've got. But otherwise, they have no chance. And instead, he comes out and he takes a very passive approach one more time. And honestly, to me, that's where the series turns, in much the same way that it turned that first year when Dallas came back. And so I look at it and I feel as if part of the reason that he's going back to Cleveland is one, he does want to amend his ways with the fan base and his hometown and the people that I know that has always bothered him. The people from where he grew up hate him, and that for a guy of his temperament, like Kobe Bryant doesn't care how people in Philadelphia feel about him. It's more motivation if anything else. LeBron James cares. LeBron James is a different kind of guy. And so I know that he wanted to fix that, and that's why the belief was he'd always go back eventually. But by going back now, to me it's more evidence that it's really not about championships. Because if it was really about championships, he could have signed the same deal that he signed in Cleveland. He could have signed in Miami. 2-year deal, 1-year opt-out, see where it goes for the next year or two. Let the Cleveland situation develop. Let Kyrie Irving and Andrew Wiggins develop. Let that team grow. See what Anthony Bennett is. And meanwhile, you're still with a franchise and you're still with a group that, when I look around the Eastern Conference, would have still been the team to beat. And if you can get there, if you can get to the finals, who knows who you're going to meet there and who knows what condition they're going to be in when they get there. So his best chance of adding another ring, of going back and getting what he didn't get this time, was to stay in Miami. And you look at what San Antonio did. San Antonio was hard. Tim Duncan, Tim Ginobili. Tim Duncan already had more rings than LeBron James had, but it didn't matter. They lost last year. They lost something they thought was rightfully theirs. They couldn't wait to get back. They wanted to bring everybody, let's go back, let's go back. Let's make the whole trip again. Let's go back and get what we deserve, and we didn't get the last time around. What did LeBron James do? LeBron James went, you know what? I think I'm good. Ready to go back to Cleveland. And that, to me, is just, I want to appreciate LeBron James. I want to like LeBron James. I want to admire LeBron James for the player he is and the human being that he is. But then he does something like this, and I go, can I really appreciate and admire a guy who just always seems to be sidestepping the ultimate goal, the ultimate pressure, the ultimate ability to be everything that he can be? And I don't really have an answer, but I'm back in that limbo again of trying to figure out how I feel about LeBron James.
That's very interesting. Just to be slightly devil's advocate on the Cleveland situation, because I want to get your thoughts about this. It's funny because some other people have been pointing to him basically looking for the easy way out in terms of a longer window, in terms of if he's afraid that Dwayne Wade's knees are really bad, that he might be coming to a better situation, maybe not short term, but certainly medium term and long term. But what intrigues me about what you said is the notion of him coming back eventually. Is it possible that LeBron intuited that, look, he's still in his prime, but he's going to turn 30 at the end of the year, came into the league at 18, a lot of miles on that odometer, especially with postseason play. If he comes back any later in his career, the arms aren't going to be as wide open, I don't think, Rick, because it's not a matter of wanting LeBron back for sentimental reasons. It's wanting LeBron back to win a championship, not as a symbol at the end of his career, like when Jim Thome came back to the Indians a couple of years ago. So do you think he had that in his mind, that the arms aren't going to be as wide open, say, at age 34 as they will be now?
Oh, yeah, no. It's a fair point. And I do believe that, you know, a lot of people look at his calendar age and say, oh, well, he's in his prime. And I would say, yes, he is, but I don't know how much more of that prime that there is. If you look at the high school guys, notably Kevin Garnett and Kobe Bryant, physically they began to tail off around 32. And with LeBron, when you make 4 consecutive runs to the finals, when you play that many minutes of NBA basketball, particularly at the level that you have to in the postseason, that's like adding a year or two. That is additional wear and tear. Mm-hmm. I would say that Kevin Garnett extended his because they so many years it was one and done. He was getting him into the playoffs, but they weren't making deep runs. I think Kobe suffered a little bit more of that the reason that he was able to extend his career and why he was still effective, why he's still effective now, is the fact that his fundamentals were so good. And that as the athleticism went away, Kobe had a lot of other tricks in his bag that he was able to go to. That's what I'm curious about and seeing with LeBron James in terms of when the athleticism starts to wane, exactly how good is he going to be? But you make a fair point. I was thinking the same thing. I thought, you know what, I hope he doesn't wait too long, because if he goes back at a point where he can't carry a team anymore, when he can't be the focal point, that's a real consolation prize for the Cleveland Cavaliers fans. They don't want back any LeBron James. They want a LeBron James that's capable of bringing them a championship. So that's all well and good. But for those who believe that, well, Kyrie Irving and potentially Andrew Wiggins or Kevin Love, let's say Kevin Love's there. Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, Deion Waiters, that's a much better team than what he would be playing with in Miami. What have we seen with the championships that have been decided over the last few years? What has decided them? Has it been the superstars? Has it been the core? Or has it been the depth of those teams? And when you look at
Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green, sure, you're right about that.
Boris Diaw, Patty Mills coming off the bench. Meanwhile, last year, Shane Battier having a big impact, Ray Allen having a big impact, Chris Anderson having a big impact. That you can go all the way back to Dallas, J.J. Barea having an impact. It's Jan Mahimi. I mean, you can go down the line. The championships have been decided by the depth of the teams. The superstars, by and large, have canceled each other out. And I don't look, even at this point, I mean, even this coming year, it always takes a year for a group, for the core, to sort of get their act together. And then I look at the lack of depth of Cleveland, and I just feel like, you know, in fact, I had a GM tell me today, you know, it takes one more cycle. They need to see what they have. They need to see this group grow together and then use that mid-level exception and go get, you know, yet another piece. Hope that Anderson Barajal can stay healthy. I just, for all those people that, you know, well, you know, Dwayne Wade broke down and Chris Bosh, wasn't up to the task and Ray Allen looked old. And I'm thinking, you know, are we talking about the same team that waltzed through the Eastern Conference and won game two on San Antonio's floor and darn near should have won game one? Are we talking about the same team? Is that the broken down team that can't win anymore that you're talking about? I think sometimes we get caught up. We're prisoners of the moment. It's the last look that we have at a team. And yes, Dwayne Wade looked tired. Chris Bosh looked tired. They all looked tired. And you know why? San Antonio, that was their whole mantra. We have more depth than they do. We are going to run them ragged. I dare say that Miami was not prepared, based on the teams that they played, to face that kind of onslaught, to face a team that had that kind of championship medal. And ultimately, that was the difference. And it was a little more lopsided than I believe in five games. You say somebody lost in five games, you think, okay, that was a pretty dominant result. I don't think it was as dominant as that result would suggest. And it was simply because San Antonio ran them ragged. Now, what are the chances that San Antonio can get back there again? What are the chances that that Miami is going to face a team that has that kind of mental toughness? There's not another team out there that has that knows what it is to win a championship, other than the Miami Heat as constituted. So for those people who think that LeBron James is going to a team in Cleveland that has a better chance of winning a championship, I would respectfully say you have no idea what championship teams are made out of, because it's not just the names on the back of the jersey. It's not just, you know, what kind of numbers they put up. Kevin Love has never even played in a playoff game. He doesn't even know what that feels like, much less what it takes to win a playoff series. The same would be said for Andrew Wiggins if they don't make the deal. So you have exactly one, and Kyrie Irving, same thing. You have exactly one guy who understands how hard it is and how hard you have to work and how much you, how well you have to execute. It's a learning process. You can't get that by osmosis just by hanging around LeBron James. They're going to have to experience it, which is, you know, Las Vegas aside, God bless them. There's no way that I put the Cleveland Cavaliers as the team to beat for next season.
That is definitely something that people would agree upon, I think, anybody who's really following the game of basketball. And again, as far as guys on the Cavs who have playoff experience, you know, the fact that one of them is Anderson Varejão, and I can still see it in my sleep, what ended the finals in 2007, game three, coming down the lane like a three-year-old with a tether ball. You know, no offense to Anderson Varejão, who's really come a long way, especially offensively since then. But, yeah, you're right about that. The pool is not deep in terms of playoff wisdom and experience on this team. And you referenced previously about LeBron not having the help in Cleveland the last time around, and that's true. Of course, the great untold story of that period of time, largely the great untold story outside of Cleveland, that is how much LeBron himself influenced that. Hey, you better sign Larry Hughes to this max contract if you want me to stay. And all these things that he bullied Danny Ferry into doing, which Danny Ferry did because he felt like he had no other choice. I'm starting to wonder, are we seeing a little bit of that again with this whole Kevin Love, Andrew Wiggins thing here? The fact that Andrew Wiggins was not referenced in the letter. I say this is an Andrew Wiggins partisan and somebody who's looking at a bird in the hand versus two in the bush. I'll take the two in the bush, thank you very much. And there's a lot of people around town that would agree with that. Is there a little bit of a danger again of LeBron kind of leaning on them and them maybe acquiescing to this? Is that playing into the whole Kevin Love scenario in the NBA right now?
Well, I've heard a little whispers about there's some history between Andrew Wiggins and LeBron James that would prompt that. It has to do with, and who knows, this is darn near hearsay. It had to do with a disagreement in the club, one not recognizing the other, somebody got dissed, whatever it is. So there's a little bit of that going on. But no, there's no question. LeBron comes back. I mean, look, just think about it. LeBron didn't even talk to David Griffin, the GM, or David Blatt, the head coach, before he made the decision. There was only one person that he talked to, Dan Gilbert, the owner, and he made peace with him. And then he made his decision. And they welcomed him back, of course, with open arms. But isn't that the same situation, the exact same situation that they had the last time he was there? And look, he even tested it when he went to Miami. He was ready to I don't want to say throw Spoelstra under the bus, but try to leverage his authority over Spoelstra. And it was only Pat Riley coming out and basically standing beside Spoelstra and saying, no, this is my coach. What he says goes. This is the way we're going to do it. And ultimately, what did it result in? It resulted in championships for LeBron. But I've been told and have to believe that's not the way he likes things done. He likes to be in charge, despite the fact that it hasn't resulted in a whole lot of success. I think that is a great concern. And I know a lot of people would say, well, LeBron's coming back to Cleveland. He's coming back with a lot more experience. He's much more mature. I would agree with all of that. I still don't like my players being my GM. If a coach is too close to the situation, and I believe he is, if he has too much personally invested, emotionally invested in the team to make the kind of sound personnel decisions that have to be made, then I can guarantee you that a player is going to be too personally and emotionally vested to make the right decision. So, yes, that is a legitimate point of concern with LeBron coming back, is that it's going to be like it was before, and the way it was before was not a healthy situation.
Well, and again, as much as LeBron has always idolized Michael Jordan, maybe this is a comparison he wouldn't like. Thus far, LeBron has shown that he's got about as much aptitude as a basketball executive as Michael Jordan has shown with his track record. That's one place where they compare as well as on the floor. When you look at the moves that LeBron has influenced the Cavs to make over a period of time, and hopefully won't be making this time around again, but we will have to see about that.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.